An old rifle range led to the closure this week of a Helena Middle School decades after the range was shut down. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne, and Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry tells us how one community is celebrating the Martin Luther King holiday in song. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with a Montanan who worked on the Oscar-nominated film Nebraska that was partially filmed in Montana. C.R. Anderson Middle School students will be heading back to class next week. The state's largest middle school abruptly closed last Tuesday after elevated lead levels were found at the site of the school's old firing range. Further testing shows the lead was confined to that area, and cleanup efforts should be completed in the next 5 days. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce finds out more about the shooting range thought responsible for the contamination.
C.R. Anderson Middle School's rifle range closed down in 1994, and so Carrie Severson was in one of the last classes to get to use it.
We had a class down there as part of our gym program.
She says most of that course was actually spent up in a classroom, preparing, learning about guns.
I think we only spent a few days in the range actually practicing the target shooting.
The kids used .22 caliber rifles. She remembers a long hallway without doors or windows with the targets at one end. Today, classrooms stand in place of that old range.
But right now, they're cleaning and things like that, so we're not allowed to go down there, which is a good thing for you and me.
That's C.R. Anderson Principal Bruce Campbell. A company that specializes in lead testing and removal is down there now, cleaning lead dust. Concentrations were highest near where the target site of the range was, where the lead bullets ended up. Levels found there were 25 times what's considered healthy by the CDC, though only on certain surfaces like the tops of light fixtures or in ceiling tiles. Lead readings drop dramatically as you start to move away from where the targets were. Principal Campbell did briefly attend to C.R. Anderson as a kid, but he never took the shooting class. He says in the 70s and 80s, the idea of having a shooting range in school was a more acceptable part of the culture.
As we progress and we think about it in today's, it sounds like that, wow, a firing range in a public school is pretty different. But at that time, it was part of the curriculum.
He says the school does not have a shooting program today. Montana's Clean Indoor Air Act was responsible for closing some of the state's indoor firing ranges. But it's only recently the sites of some of these old ranges are being tested. A Montana Department of Environmental Quality building in Helena was closed last fall after high lead levels were found. It had an old rifle range, too, and it has yet to open back up. Helena parent Andy Adamick has a sixth grader at C.R. Anderson. He says the dangers of lead have been known for decades. He wonders why it has taken so long to clean the old firing range site.
We've known about this for years. Certainly since the 70s, we should have tested it.
Helena School Superintendent Kent Colgin says codes and standards do change over time.
When they rebuilt it, I would like to think that they followed all the codes, everything of the time, but I can't answer that question.
He says today lead is not a contaminant normally tested for in public buildings. But he says as soon as the old firing range was brought to his attention, he asked for the screenings. He says the C.R. Anderson closure now has him thinking about other unknown contaminants, which may be hiding in the capital city's other old school buildings. He wants the school district to further look into that. I'm Dan Boyce reporting in Helena.
And in other news from around the state, the state Supreme Court says a landowner's claims that he can control access to a portion of the Ruby River don't hold water. Today, the court rejected James Kennedy's appeal of a lower judge's decision. The ruling affirms the constitutionally protected right of public access to waterways. Kennedy had argued that because he owns the riverbed underlying the river, he has the right to exclude people from wading or floating on the water. Montana's Constitution says the waters within the state are state property held in trust for the people. The justices said in the ruling that landowners may not impede the public's exercise of that right to access state waters. The justices also reversed the lower court's ruling that limited public access to easements used primarily for maintenance. Two JCPenney stores in Montana are among 33 underperforming stores the company is closing nationwide. Managers say the closure of the Butte and Cutbank stores will put about 50 people out of work. Michelle LaProuse, the manager of the Butte store, says 32 people will lose their jobs, a dozen who work full-time and 20 who work part-time. Manager Teresa Jordan says the Cutbank store typically has between 15 and 19 employees. The Montana stores are expected to close by early May. A mining company that's been active in Montana for a couple of years has received approval to begin copper exploration. The Montana Department of Environmental Quality today authorized Tintina Alaska Exploration Incorporated to begin its work on the Black Butte Copper Project, which is about 15 miles north of White Sulphur Springs. The chief of DEQ's Environmental Management Bureau, Warren McCullough, says Tintina is not the first company to explore that site.
They picked up an exploration project which had been drilled a couple of decades back and then reclaimed. They reacquired it, and they have done core drilling on it for a couple of years, and now they have applied for an amendment to their exploration license which would allow them to construct a 5,200-foot decline, which is a mine opening going downwards. It's inclined at a negative angle, and they would like to construct the decline to give them access to the deposit that they have been drilling so they can remove up to 10,000 tons for metallurgical testing.
McCullough stresses this permit is only for exploration purposes and not to allow mining activity. He says company documents suggest a rather rich deposit of copper minerals lies several hundred feet below the surface.
They have outlined several million tons of material, not a reserve, they call it a measured or indicated or inferred resource, several million tons of material that would run perhaps 3% plus copper.
DEQ says water quality and stream flow protections are critical.
We have been on top of the situation. We have been out there frequently monitoring their activities. They have put in monitoring wells. They have also sampled surface seeps. So we're taking all sorts of precautions to protect the water quantity and water quality there. The activities to date have been bonded, yes. We do not have a bond in place for the exploration decline because my engineer is still in the process of calculating that. We'll have that number and be able to share it with the company pretty soon. Once we establish that number, their permission to proceed is contingent on the state's receipt of the bond in an acceptable form.
McCullough says DEQ received over 4,000 public comments on the Black Butte Exploration Project. He says many important observations and contributions from those comments were incorporated into the final mitigated environmental assessment. A physician has lost his privileges to practice at a Shelby hospital and clinic after the hospital board found he frequently bullied staff members. The Marias Medical Center Board of Directors voted 4-3 yesterday to revoke hospital privileges for Dr. Robert Clary. KSEN-AM reports Clary will retain hospital privileges until January 25th. The hospital board released a statement saying the board found, quote, bullying was occurring on a frequent basis at Marias Medical Center, end quote, and no compromise could be worked out. The statement says Clary's privileges will be revoked until medical staff determines the behavior has changed enough to reconsider. The Great Falls Tribune reports Marias Healthcare Clinic revoked Clary's privileges on December 17th over an apparent confrontation with a female staffer. Clary did not immediately return a phone call to his home today seeking comment. Montana's ongoing effort to combat and raise awareness of the scourge of human trafficking got a boost this week. Town pump gas stations, convenience stores, and casinos, all 210 of them in Montana, will now be displaying a human trafficking awareness poster. That poster features the solemn gaze of a young woman. Big red text at the top asks, quote, "Do you feel like a slave?" Smaller text in white lettering urges anyone forced into prostitution or any work to call the Human Trafficking Resource Center hotline. Per legislative mandate, it's written in both English and Spanish. Montana Attorney General Tim Fox says human trafficking is the second fastest growing and profitable criminal endeavor, topped only by international drug trade. Anecdotal evidence suggests human trafficking is on the rise in the areas supporting the Bakken oil boom.
There are a lot of different ways that Montanans can help. They need to watch out for instances where they see particularly young people who aren't free to leave or come and go as they wish. Certainly, if the folks look fearful or depressed, if their life is being controlled, looks like others are talking for them, won't allow them to talk or go out. There are just a lot of different signs. You can go to not only our website, which is www.doj.mt.gov to get more information, but you can also go to polarisproject.org.
The Polaris Project serves an international clearinghouse that delivers human trafficking reports to the appropriate authorities. Fox praises Town Pump's partnership with the Montana Department of Justice on this issue.
That's huge, and frankly, Town Pump is probably one of the most prominent businesses in our state. They seem to be pretty much everywhere, and for them to agree to do this is huge for the people of Montana. If you happen to do business with Town Pump, I hope you'll stop in and thank the folks in your local stores and casinos and hotels for being such great partners with our office.
If you suspect human trafficking or are being forced to work against your will, call 1-888-373-7888. Civil rights, slavery in U.S. history, and modern-day slavery are being looked at during a Martin Luther King Jr. Day event in the Flathead. Katrin Fry reports much of this year's commemoration is taking place through song.
The St. Charles Women's Choir practices in the loft at the Catholic Church in Whitefish. They are one of several performers singing as part of the group Love Lives Here, Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebration. Love Lives Here is affiliated with the Montana Human Rights Network, and it's sponsoring a program titled Let Freedom Sing, Songs That Changed America. Organizer Ina Albert says local talent will give spoken word performances as well as music.
We're trying to cover the songs that really affected America. And that would start, you know, Let Freedom Sing. That would start, at least with us, with the Civil War, and with slavery.
Albert says they're also talking about the modern day issue of sex slavery.
We're talking about human rights. Love Lives Here is about human rights and about making a community that cares and to sing for freedom. And this is really a problem that we face today that's very, very serious, not only here, but all over the world.
The songs come out of the pre-Civil War era of slavery and the Underground Railroad.
Why these songs made a difference. There's a section here that the St. Charles Choir from the Catholic Church in Whitefish is singing about the Underground Railroad songs and how those songs were really coded to tell who was coming on the Underground Railroad and what their route was.
Albert says this year's event differs from past Dr. King Day celebrations in its focus on song over speeches.
It's not focused on Martin Luther King's speeches and the difference that they made or the history of the civil rights movement quite as much as it's focused on a broad spectrum of how music is the messenger of what our values are and what our vision was and is.
Another new thing is the awarding of the peace quilt sewed by the women of the Mennonite Church in Creston, which Albert says they intend as an annual event. Albert says the award will go to an individual or organization who is working toward creating a more civil, peaceful, healing, and harmonious community.
It's important that we pay attention and be thankful for the people who share these values and work for these values here in our community. It encourages more of us to take part.
The event will feature a combined Flathead and Glacier High School's choir, members of the Alpine Theater Project, as well as the St. Charles Women's Choir. It's free to attend at Flathead High School at 7:30 on Tuesday the 21st. Love Lives Here will accept donations at the door. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
My burdens down.
The theme of this year's Whitefish Winter Carnival is Viva Las Vegas, and organizers say they have the definitive grand marshal for this year's parade, Wayne Newton. Carnival Board Chairman Paul Johansson says Newton's wife confirmed via email that the man known as Mr. Las Vegas would be honored to lead the parade through downtown Whitefish on February 8th. Johansson says organizers were able to contact Newton through a friend of his wife's. Ann Gower of Billings found out on Facebook today that the film Nebraska has been nominated for Best Picture of the Year and for five other Oscars, including Best Director and Best Actor. Gower has reason to be excited. The co-owner of Spotlight Productions was the assistant location manager for the film, which shot its early scenes in Billings and Laurel. The film stars Bruce Dern and Will Forte and is directed by Alexander Payne. In this feature interview, Gower talks with news director Sally Mock about her experience working on the film and about how her degree in radio television from the University of Montana prepared her for a career in television and film production.
Because video production and radio television is a little bit of scripting and a little bit of music and a little bit of set decoration and costumes, and it really was good preparation for working on a movie.
And you don't just do movies. You do television and commercials and I think even some web work, right?
Well, yes. I have a video production company called Spotlight Productions. There are just two of us. And then my husband is an editor, a video editor. So we do a lot of work for corporate production, training videos, TV commercials, and we crew when news organizations come into the state.
So give me an example of what a typical month for Spotlight Productions might be like. What kind of projects would you be working on?
There is no such thing as typical in this business, but generally I have anywhere from 5 to 10 projects going. And because so many videos involve filming over time, there are multiple layers going on. So you might be scripting for one, shooting for another, editing for another. And we have done anything from hour-long documentaries to crewing for the news when something crazy happens in Montana, which happens often, then we'll run to do the story for a news organization. So, and then television commercials in between.
So now tell me how you got involved with the film Nebraska, which is up for Best Picture this year, a terrific film, and tell me how that came about.
I owe getting involved in the movie Nebraska to the Montana Film Office. It started out with some inquiries. They would email me and say, what are some good restaurants in Billings or what are some good hotels? And I corresponded with them for a while, having no idea what it was for. And eventually Denny Staggs, who is now the film commissioner, came to Billings, and he had been location scouting for the movie. But because he's based in Helena, it was difficult for him to stay because he had his other responsibilities. So he suggested to Paramount Pictures that they hire me as a local, and that's how it all began.
And so your first job for the movie then was to find good restaurants and then find good places to shoot?
My first job for the movie was location scouting, and my task was to find the house for Woody and Kate. That's Bruce Dern and June Squibb's characters. And it was very specific what they were looking for. They wanted an older home with the rims in the background, with a living room in the front and a kitchen in the back, with a door out the back, looking toward a garage that was a separate garage. So it was very specific. And I would go around and take pictures every day and then post them on the Film Commission site. They use a program called Real Scout. And then the movie producers would look at that, where they were based in Nebraska, and call. We'd have a conference every morning, and they would tell me what they liked and what they'd like to see different. And then I would go out again and take more pictures. And everything was posted in black and white because the film was black and white. So I really had to look at things as they were going to be in the movie. It was quite interesting.
And then when they came to Montana to shoot the movie, you were still working for them and continued to throughout, right?
Yes, I was very lucky because I had a lot of experience in production. So generally on a movie, you're in one department and you stay in that department. But because I had experience in a lot of different areas and I was a local contact, some of the other departments from the movie called on me to help. For example, costuming help called me where I helped find the sheriff's uniforms, or casting called because they needed help finding somebody to portray the role of the officer who stops Woody as he's walking down the street. I also helped with props and art. And so I was really lucky to get to help in different areas. But generally my responsibility was locations, and that was to come up with agreements with the people who owned the property, agreements so it was okay to use their property, and then negotiate contracts, get clearance for copyrighted materials and logos, and then after the movie was over, sign location releases that everything was put back in order.
And I assume most people would be thrilled to have a movie shot in their home or on their property. Are people generally very excited about that? And plus they get compensation for it too.
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because going door to door and asking people if you can go into their home to take pictures to put on the internet for a movie sounds a bit unusual. So I tried to provide as much information as I could, and I encouraged them to call the state to find out that it was legitimate. And most people welcomed me in and let me take pictures. And sometimes once you'd get inside a house, you'd find that the kitchen had been redecorated or things that you couldn't see from the outside of the house that made them not work for what the movie people were looking for. So it took a lot of digging before we came up with the perfect house. And the one we finally found was in Laurel.
And it's in the movie.
It is in the movie, yes. And the homeowners, they were wonderful. They were so accommodating. And I have to say the people at the movie were wonderful as well, because they cared for their pets. They put them in kennels. They put the homeowners up at a nice hotel. And they allowed them on the set, so they got pictures with the stars. And my job was to go door to door and let all the neighbors know what was going on, get permits where needed, agreements where needed for power, set up locations for catering, and just do everything that it takes to make things go smoothly on location.
There are some horror stories out there, of course, of movie crews that come into a place and kind of take it over and are rude to the locals. But it sounds like this was a very nice arrangement and experience for all the people involved.
It really was. Alexander Payne is a wonderful director, and he was very concerned that everybody be taken care of. And he loves pets. He loves cats. And he was really particularly concerned that the animals not be displaced for too long a time. So they were always well cared for. And after it was over, we picked up every water bottle. We really took care to make sure that every location was left in a really good condition.
There have been some outstanding movies filmed over the years in Montana, but we're still hardly a film mecca. Are movie makers surprised when they come to Montana and find that there are very skilled people like yourself who are here to be able to help them? And do you think Montana continues to have a future in this industry?
I do think so, because there are wide open spaces in Montana, which you don't find in many other states. The Montana Film Commission does a wonderful job at posting on their site all the different crew people who are available. So when outside production companies come into the state, they can find any type of skill level person that they need for their movies. And it's really a wonderful service both for the movie companies and for the crew that lives here to help us find work. They've always been really wonderful to our company, and I really appreciate what they do.
When you were making Nebraska, or helping make Nebraska with your location scouting and so on, did you have a notion at the time that this was going to be a very special film? And how'd you find out when it was announced that it's nominated for Best Picture and for 5 other Oscars?
I did read the script, so I knew the story before we began. But it was really brought to life in the acting and the directing. Bruce Dern and Will Forte and June Scribb really brought the characters to life. So watching it on the big screen, it was really so much more than what I had read on paper. And it was Alexander Payne's vision and his knack for making even serious scenes humorous that I found really made the movie what it is.
Well, I have been speaking with Ann Gower, who is co-owner of the Billings-based Spotlight Productions, and she was involved in the making of the Oscar-nominated film Nebraska. And Ann, fun to talk to you and get some behind-the-scenes look and some pre-Oscar buzz about that movie. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight should be partly cloudy with patchy freezing fog and lows 16 to 23 degrees. Tomorrow calls for mostly sunny skies with some patchy freezing fog in the morning with highs in the mid-30s to lower 40s. In central Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies with lows 25 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow should be partly cloudy with highs in the 40s. And in southwest Montana tonight, it should be mostly clear with lows 15 to 25 degrees. Tomorrow, look for sunny skies with highs 35 to 45 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Evan Barrett.
was young, there were three pictures in my parents' hallway: Jesus Christ, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and John L. Lewis, the president of the United Mine Workers Union. These men informed my family's political and life perspective. My dad was born in Red Lodge into an Irish-American coal mining family. Raised during the Great Depression, his family had little, but worked hard, treasuring the Treasure State and its people. They believed in unions, protecting workers like themselves, people who ultimately made everything happen. And they believed in workers' rights to organize, to make lives better. That principle was found in their politics and in their Catholic faith. Just out of high school, Dad joined the New Deal's CCC, reinforcing his trust in FDR. He eventually ended up in a job at Douglas Aircraft in Los Angeles, working during the day and boxing at night for a dollar a round. Across the neighbor's fence in L.A., he spotted a gorgeous 5-foot brunette with deep brown eyes and a big city swagger. She was a Jewish beauty, born in Connecticut. Her father, a graduate of the London Conservatory of Music, emigrated to America, becoming a U.S. Army doughboy in World War I. He composed and arranged music, first in New York City, and then in Hollywood, where he arranged music for films like Gone with the Wind. She, too, was musical, once penning a song done by Frank Sinatra. But she immediately fell in love with this cowboy boxer from Montana, and he was smitten, too. Turns out they were born 5 days apart and a continent apart, but fate had brought them together. Against odds, they rashly but happily married. Then came Pearl Harbor. Dad enlisted in the Navy, but before going overseas, he was hit with asthma. So the Navy sent him home to Montana, searching for clean air for his lungs, with his young wife alongside. Now, my mom went from a maids-in-the-house youth to a Montana log cabin with an outhouse and hand-pumped well water. They worked hard so their growing family, which ultimately reached 6 sons, could get by. They never had enough of anything but love for each other, their family, and a commitment to community as a way to make life better for their children. While they had little, they knew many who had even less. They were part of the little people who believed in the American dream, where things would improve for all citizens together. Beyond demonstrating the value of hard work, they also showed us the lessons of tolerance. For how else could kids of that time, with a Jewish mother, see the world being raised in the shadow of the Holocaust, one of the greatest atrocities in human history? The Jewish people had suffered pains of intolerance unimaginable, even to the Irish Catholics, who had themselves found prejudice in America years before. You know, there's a joke that being both Jewish and Catholic gives you guilt on both sides. But in reality, we learned from both sides the lessons that intolerance painfully brought to the world. So with enlightened parents, we emerged with a tolerance for other people's beliefs, but also our own firm belief in people over power. Mom is now 94. She's still strong, but age is slowly taking its toll. They were married for 63 years until the day Dad passed about 10 years ago. He was powerful, but taught us to be concerned for the weak. He was a true Christian, adhering to Christ's principles from the Sermon on the Mount. And Mom brought us the Jewish tradition of caring for the least of us that Christ, who was a Jew, embodied. They both taught us to seek opportunity and fairness for all, a commitment to workers, and a belief that we were a part of a community, not just standalone individuals. What we give our children to pass on to their children is shaped immeasurably by what we were given by our parents. So in our family, we pass on values, faith, ethical standards, selflessness, and commitment to workers, to community, and to the least among us. We all remember the three pictures of the giants on our hallway wall. But most importantly, we remember the life lessons we learned from our parents. Though they were the little people, they were themselves giants, the kind of giants this country needs more of.
This is Evan Barrett in Butte, thinking about the giants among us.
Evan Barrett is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.